Good morning. The record may show this is the time and the place set for the special rules hearing. Due notice has been given to all concerned through publication in the State Bar Newsletter proposals. We have three of them today, and this is the time and the place where the court will take public hearing, public comment, and we have also received on one rule proposal number two written comments from Ms. Viken, which are also part of the record. The way we do this, to shorten things up, is we ask for the opponents of the proposal to speak first. Thus, if there aren't any, presumably the proponent doesn't have a whole lot to rebut. And so we will proceed to Proposal 1, and this would amend SDCL 25458.1. This is proposed by the Presiding Judges Council. Is there anybody that wishes to speak in opposition to this? Would you come forward then to the podium, please?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Judge.
Doug Hoffman, Circuit Judge in the Second Circuit. I actually came primarily because of proposal number two, but I thought as long as I was here, I'd make a comment with respect to proposal number one with respect to the family court mediators. Before I became a judge, I was a family court mediator for about 8 years, and I received the requisite training at Hamline University and also at the University of South Dakota, and began doing mediations principally in family court situations. There, at least in the Sioux Falls area, there's kind of a separation between your ordinary civil mediators that are handling a lot of the insurance and accident type claims as opposed to the mediation for the family court matters. And so I just started doing them. Of course, I, you know, representing clients as an attorney, I've been involved in a number of mediations over the years as an advocate or a participant, but not as a mediator. So I never actually complied with the consultation with experienced mediator for at least three mediation sessions. I think it was two mediation sessions at that time, but I can't recall. And so I don't think I was ever on the approved list with the circuit court because of that. And I just felt that that was kind of an unwieldy responsibility for a practicing attorney that wants to get into family court mediation, because you have to take that time out of your schedule without compensation. You have to find another mediator that's probably going to be your competitor for mediation services to give you tutelage during that process. And these are people that you probably already participated in. So I was probably doing a dozen family court mediations a month, I think. You're getting referrals from attorneys from all around the community, but I was never on the approved list. And I guess I just was thinking that perhaps there could be an exception or a loosening of that requirement for attorneys that are qualified otherwise through the training and experience to do family court mediation, because we have a paucity of qualified family court mediators in the Second Circuit area. I know, having just come off the divorce and civil rotation there, and I think there's a lot of attorneys that would like to give it a try, and so I'm just concerned, and would be good at it, I think. And I think having attorneys in the family court mediation realm adds a level of expertise that isn't necessarily available with just the counselors that are doing it, and so that was my only concern on this, that if we could perhaps consider adjusting that at least three mediation sessions for attorney, you know, licensed practicing attorney, family court mediators that have otherwise had the training might encourage more attorneys to get involved in that process.
Might I invite you then to submit within a reasonable time specific language that you would like to see so that we know specifically what you would like changed about this?
I could certainly do that by the end of the week, I think.
Okay.
By email, or who would I submit that to?
It could be by letter or email. Send it to the clerk.
Okay. Very good.
Then we'll know specifically what you would like to see as changed. Any other questions for Judge Hoffman? Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Any other further comments on proposal number one? Ms. Watson?
Good morning, Chief Justice, Associate Justices. Thank you for granting me permission to appear before you today. My name is Deborah Watson. I'm a family law lawyer in Rapid City. I've been practicing family law in Rapid City for over 30 years, helping families through their domestic issues. As some of you may recall, I was before you several years ago asking you to update the visitation guidelines to parenting guidelines, and at that time you sent me back to the legislature and suggested that I get the code changed and then return. So having accomplished that, I'm back again. I submitted a draft of the parenting guidelines to Justice Konenkamp, who, in his infinite wisdom, has improved upon them. I encourage you to adopt the guidelines.
Are you speaking to Proposal 2?
Yes.
Okay. We're not quite done with 1 yet.
Oh, sorry.
Well, wait a minute. We might be. Anybody else want to speak on number 1? We're done. Keep going, I guess.
Sorry. I thought we were on the parenting guidelines.
Okay,
the revisions address 4 principal areas. 1, they changed the terminology from visitation to parenting time. And visitation, we found, was a degrading term for a non-custodial parent's time with the children. We wanted parents to continue to parent after the separation, not have visitation with their children. 2, the emphasis was put on the children rather than the parents. If we get parents to think about what's best for their children, it sometimes lessens the pain and anger and makes things better for the children. Also, through experience, we found better ways of doing things. And we've also updated the guidelines to correspond to changes in South Dakota law that's been made by the legislature. And lastly, technology, as you know, has flourished, and the guidelines needed to reflect the changing times. Children now have cell phones, as do their parents. Parents can text and email, which sometimes makes communication easier and more efficient. Also, Skype or the webcam assists in communicating where there's a relocation or a deployment. I guess the main thing that I would ask you to consider is making the parenting guidelines mandatory. Until the situation stabilizes, the parents need rules, and the children need structure and stability. And I think, as I understand the code, that it is mandatory, but I think that it needs to be put in the parenting guidelines also. But by making it mandatory, we essentially bring order to a chaotic situation. So I would ask you to adopt the guidelines. And I would be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Ms. Watson?
I'm not sure I understand the mandatory thing.
Well, basically, when there's
go ahead.
Any litigation commenced, whether it's a divorce or custody or paternity action, then the mandatory guidelines would be effective until the parents agree otherwise or the court orders differently. So we have some sort of plan in place until other arrangements can be made, like I said, either the parents voluntarily or the court. Because otherwise, there's just nothing in place, and the parents don't know what to do, and they're angry and in pain, and it's chaos, and it's just a mess for everyone. And until they can get the situation stabilized, we need something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Viken, you submitted extensive written comments. Would you like to be heard orally?
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice and members of the court, and welcome to our newest justice.
Thank you.
I'm not going to go over all of the things. The Chief Justice has indicated that we will have an opportunity, Ms. Watson and I, to meet with Justice Konenkamp. Ms. Watson and I graduated from law school together. We were in the same class. We were visiting this morning. Most of the things that I have recommended, she is agreeable to, so I hopefully will be able to work those out. I do want to address a few things, and for those of you who are not familiar with the background of these guidelines, I think it might be helpful to just take a second to tell you about that. These guidelines actually are a successor guidelines to the Seventh Circuit guidelines. When Judge, I'm trying to remember whether it was Judge Tice who was the presiding judge.
No, I was.
You were.
92. Yeah.
I thought it was you, Your Honor. Justice Konenkamp set up a committee made up of counselors and lawyers and people who are doing mediation to work on the guidelines, and we came up with the guidelines. And part of what my concern that I've raised in the letter to you is has to do with the differences in the ages and how that's handled. The alternatives were, you know, birth to 6 months and so on. And I did a chart for you just to make it clear visually, because I'm a visual person. And when we put those together, it was with the help of the counselors primarily, because the lawyers don't understand that part of it. And so I've raised some concerns about those, and I guess I wanted you to understand historically how did we get to what we have. Because basically this court then approved our guidelines and made them into the what were originally the voluntary parenting guidelines. They were just guidelines. They were just suggestions. Then the legislature did, in 2008, make them mandatory, and mandatory by way of putting them on a summons and as part of the summons so that they would go into effect. And to answer a little more, Justice Zinser, the issue that you raised, one of the things that happens sometimes is that when people start a divorce action, they're not very happy with each other, and one will try to withhold the children as punishment. And so that was one of the reasons we wanted them. But another important one that I mentioned was the pro se defendants. Without having mandatorily something that goes into effect, the pro se people have nothing to enforce. And so I do urge you to keep them mandatory, as Ms. Watson has agreed as well. I did prepare, and I've given to the Chief Justice, I had my secretary go through and do a clean copy of what this proposal would look like if you accepted the changes that I had. Because those of us who are in the legislature are kind of used to watching the underlines and inserts, but sometimes it's difficult to comprehend what I'm trying to say. I did not make any changes in the time for the ages. I just raised issues with the court about that as to what that should be, but especially having something for like birth to three, that distinction, as opposed to sticking newborn babies into a six-month category. The problem is that lawyers look at that and they go, well, I want the most. And we try to say, well, that, you know, but this is just a newborn baby. And so we run into problems with interpreting that. All of you have been circuit judges. You all know what I'm talking about. I don't have to belabor it. I do want to apologize. I read my letter on the way over here. And if anybody's fussy about grammar, it's me. I think I found 5 grammar errors in my letter. And it was due to the fact that, primarily, that originally I was putting child and children in every place, and so I had the verbs that went with that. I told my secretary to take out the and children. Well, she took them out some places and not others, so I'm reading over on the way over. So I apologize. I'm real fussy. My staff would tell you, one of whom is here today, that I'm really fussy about those kinds of errors. So I do apologize to the court about that. Hopefully you understood what I was trying to say. The other things are in my letter, and I'm not going to belabor the court's and take the court's time. I thank you for the opportunity. I did go beyond what you had and made some other suggestions just based on my same, it's actually 34 years, Deb, 34 years of practicing family law and the things that we see constantly. And I appreciate your time and your effort on this important project. Thank you.
Well, the court expresses its appreciation to both of you for the amount of time that you've contributed in an area you clearly have expertise in to improve this for all the people of South Dakota. Thank you. Further comments, either for or against proposal number 2? Judge Hoffman.
Well, thank you, Your Honors, and counsel. Your Honors, I just felt motivated to come and offer some commentary with respect to the parenting guidelines, having been on the divorce and civil rotation for the past year and a half in Sioux Falls. Had a great deal of contact, of course, with these kinds of cases, and practiced in that area for 16 years before I became a circuit judge. And also, as I mentioned, having mediated a number of cases as well. I'm in favor of the guidelines. I'm in favor of the revisions, for the most part, that have been recommended, including the changing of the title. I think that they've been a progressive, favorable development in family law. My concern is that I did not feel that perhaps the portions that relate to children under the age of five perhaps were given a review with an equal level of a view towards a more progressive approach than perhaps has been utilized. And so, you know, from the perspective of the circuit bench, hearing these cases, presiding over them, making decisions in individual cases based upon the unique circumstances of each family and the dynamics, I just felt like I should come and make some comments, and so I'll likely, you know, be ruling on cases where the guidelines will be brought to my attention on a regular basis. And usually folks have been parenting in some form or fashion before they've had an opportunity to come before the court. I'm not an expert in the field. I have some. My wife has a doctorate in counseling and psychology and teaches psychology at the University of Sioux Falls, and she went through her training while I was practicing law. So I've been picking up some of it along the way, but of course hearing expert testimony and the kinds of cases that we hear and piecing things together, I just feel that with respect to the children under five, and particularly for the infants and toddlers, the revisions as proposed don't go far enough to try to equalize the playing field, I think, to give children an opportunity to spend appropriate bonding and parenting time with the non-custodial parent. That's just my sense of things over the years of my experience. And so typically in the cases that I see, generally speaking, I'm entering orders that are going to be more liberalized in that regard than what the guidelines indicate. And I think primarily the issue there is probably the evolution of the theories with respect to early child development and attachment theory. And the revisions don't address specifically children having an appropriate nurturing sense of security and predictability with both parents, as opposed to a primary caregiver. I guess I'm looking at the language under 2.1, that infants and toddlers have a great need for continuous contact with the primary caregiver who provides a sense of security, etc. Generally, overnight visits for infants and toddlers are not recommended unless, etc., etc. I think that the paradigm in the modern view is that children see both their parents as primary caregivers. I think certainly when there's an intact family, that's the paradigm now. And I think that we're moving in our policy might be more progressive if we were considering attempting to address that model in the case where the family is apart and the parents aren't living together. And I realize that every case is unique, but you see situations where non-custodial parents, typically the father, particularly with children born out of wedlock, but just about in every case, may be a very responsible person and have responsible family structure around him or her. And the parents live in the same community, and so there aren't, you know, artificial barriers to being able to be more involved with overnights and, you know, feeding regimens and putting the infant or toddler to bed, getting him or her up and off to daycare and those sorts of things. And so I would personally feel more comfortable with language that is a little more neutral towards the concept of allowing for more of a shared parenting paradigm for infants and toddlers, and recognizing that overnight visits are not just the exception for the extreme situation, but rather would be what we're seeking to employ more generally, unless there's indications to the contrary. So I could certainly submit some proposed language in regard to that by the end of the week on that.
That'd be great. Well, and in this case, why don't you send it directly to Justice Konenkamp, because this is his proposal.
I shall, and I'll make a copy to counsel that are present as well.
So no, I don't know. When I meet with Ms. Viken and Ms. Watson, whatever we draft up, I will share with you and get your input on, too. So we'll have your input. And I thank you for coming all this way to express your views.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the issue.
Okay. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Any other comments on Proposal 2? There being none, we'll go to Proposal 3. That is a proposal to repeal SDCL 1530-16, the requirement currently that there be proceedings held within a year from the remand of a decision of this court. Any comments on that? Yes.
May I?
Sure. This is proposed by the Supreme Court.
I don't know if it's permissible for me to ask why that's being considered. I happen to have some experience with that situation.
It is becoming a trap for the unwary. There are instances where the application of this rule at the circuit court level gives us cause for concern as to what constitutes good cause, what doesn't. Oftentimes, there is additional discovery needed to be done, maybe extensive discovery. Say we reverse a summary judgment, and now you're trying to do everything to get ready for a trial. The docket, especially in your circuit in Sioux Falls, is extremely heavy, and we have concerns with whether you can even get the case on the docket within that year. So the proposal simply, this is a rule that we understand probably goes back to 1877, and to encourage prompt resolution. But at this point, the proposal would abolish it and allow counsel to move forward with the idea that the moving party always has the obligation to move the case forward, and it currently constitutes a barrier which we don't think is justified anymore.
Thank you, Your Honor. The question that the concern I would have only is this, and I understand exactly what you're saying. If the case is remanded back and action is supposed to be taken, the party in whose favor it's supposed to be taken, one would assume, would go forward with that. If they don't do that, then the other party, what do they do? Move to dismiss it? I happen to have one of these. That's why I'm not
right.
familiar
I mean,
with
you've this. Got other statutes in the code that can still result in dismissals for not promptly taking care of it, but this has become a trap for the unwary.
That's the only thing I was concerned about, is by taking it out, did that mean that you know, this is going to stay, in my case, for example, it's going to stay in limbo forever because
no.
the other side, because if I bring it forward, then they might decide they want to pursue it, and obviously I don't want them to pursue it, and it's been way over a year, and so I thought, well, I have the statute, when the year is up, I can move to dismiss because they haven't taken any action. So in that situation, the court is advising me there's another statute I might use for that.
Sure.
Okay.
Rule 11 and Rule 41,
yeah,
I think.
They're both still there. Yeah. It's back in the circuit court.
Right.
So that everybody, I hate to speak for everybody, they're looking at Rule 11 and Rule 41, but here's this ticking time bomb that nobody knows anything about that's a trap for the unwary.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on proposal number 3 now that I've defended it? Nobody wants to argue with the Chief Justice, therefore, we are in recess. Thank you, folks.